Hi guys, welcome to the Coscast. I'm Joey Rasool.
Oh, Tara Strand, hi.
And I'm Jordan Brown. I haven't been here in a while.
Yeah, that's right. You are back in town. And you're already getting a phone call.
Yeah.
Already. Like, we just started recording and your phone starts ringing. Really?
Didn't you just talk to her?
Jennifer?
Oh, sorry. J names got messed up.
Yeah, we were talking about that on set a little while ago, where it's just J names up like crazy. Every project that we've worked on that's been like a fan film or something like that, there's always been a lot of J names and a lot of Matts.
Totally.
As well.
Like, if I don't remember a guy's name, if I just say, like,
just
Matt, Matt or Chris, you're golden. You're, like, pretty much, you got an 80% chance.
At least we don't have any Kyles, man. Kyles are assholes.
I don't know any Kyles. Do I? Oh, God.
So, you've been gone for a while, Jordan, but I know that you are, you were recently talking about your World of Warcraft account, and what are you going to do with that?
Yeah, in the near future, I'm going to sell it. Actually had it appraised today. Lo and behold, I'm getting way more money than I expected to be out of this account and wasting all of that time.
Do you feel comfortable saying how much you're potentially going to get for it? Or?
Well, it's not like they can take my account in the meantime.
Fair enough.
This company that wants to buy it from me wants to give me like $3,870. And
I'm so pissed off about that.
That's after they charge me all the fees.
For splitting up the characters.
For splitting up the characters, wow. Yeah.
Gosh.
I really want to know if that comes to you hourly for you.
I do too. I know my main character, I've spent a total of 130 days just logged on.
Wow. That's
over a third of a year. That's not including the other 9 characters that I have.
That is a lot of time. But honestly, you could maybe an hourly rate, but look at that as a daily rate as well. See how much they're paying you per day. Because honestly, you might be making more money playing World of Warcraft.
I don't know.
Some people make careers out of that.
They do. There's a lot of people who they'll buy a new account, they'll power level a character real quick, and then they'll sell it. Mm. And then they'll buy another account, power level it, and sell it.
Well, I remember a little while back, I was looking on Craigslist for like an old arcade machine. Just for the fun of it, I always wanted to see what was on sale because I don't want, like, I want one day, but I don't want, like, an old, like, oh, it's a Pac-Man machine or something like that. I want, like, you know, Rush 2049 or something.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, wouldn't that be awesome to own? You know, just something that was in the arcade when I was growing up. The way I looked at it was I popped onto Craigslist, went into the gaming section, and just adjusted it for highest price first. I figured, you know, arcade consoles, like,
big. You mean the cabinets?
Yeah, the big cabinets. Yeah. They're going to be the most expensive things. So, highest price first, so I could just be looking at the cabinets. And what was the highest price was all these people trying to sell WoW accounts and WoW characters. And it's just like, you know, level 80 includes these items, blah, 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 blah. And it's just like thousands and thousands of dollars being made every day.
Just so you guys know, I'm not advocating you doing this because it is very against the terms of service that Blizzard has set out.
Oh, yeah.
So if they find out, they will delete your account entirely. And I shouldn't even be saying it either because I've got like 3 people on my friends list on Facebook that work for Blizzard. Oh. So they could just be like, this guy.
Then they're not your Facebook friends, are they?
No. Like, I don't think they would do that. I'm just covering all my bases here.
They're not your real Facebook friends.
So something that came out this week.
Yeah,
I thought it was a joke, so I actually don't know when it came out. But the art for Assassin's Creed 3.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really interested in this because I was paying attention to Assassin's Creed and stuff because I wanted to build an Altair costume. And when they started talking about different designs and stuff, like, I would pull off an Ezio better than an Altair, but I can't afford to do all the, like, intricate detailing that Ezio would take. When people do, like, concept art for Assassin's Creed, and I think, like, oh, I'll just make up, like, my own assassin. And Assassin's Creed 3 artwork came out, and I honestly thought it was a joke. Like, I thought someone was just messing around and being
That's
like,
how I felt,
yeah,
too. I really did.
someone on Reddit's messing around with Photoshop. But then it ends up on IGN and on Game Informer. And we'll put up a link to the artwork in the Enhanced podcast so you guys can judge for yourself. But as an assassin in revolutionary times, obviously not Altair or Ezio anymore. It's a third assassin. Because, mm-hmm. And I guess that's how they've been doing it, because Assassin's Creed 1 was Altair, and Assassin's Creed 2 was Ezio, and Assassin's Creed 3 is this new guy. And it just so happens that Assassin's Creed 2 had two sequels to itself.
Yeah.
So this new character is a different-looking costume that no one's going to have done yet, and maybe I think I might tackle that. That all being said, I still don't know how I feel about the game.
I definitely don't know, especially since I'm going to call it right now. Your first client, the first person that's going to tell you to assassinate somebody in that game is going to be John Wilkes Booth.
No, that's way later in history.
I know, but you know what? I know, that's Civil War. This is the Revolutionary War, okay?
What are you doing with time?
I am destroying it. Regardless,
that's like, speaking of destroying time, that's the cover of the game is this assassin kneeling over a redcoat about to like scalp him. And I thought about that, I'm like, the redcoats are the British. If assassins are fighting the Templars are kind of the Templars are kind of the founding fathers. He really should be on the British side of this. So, yeah, I thought, I don't know what they're going to do with that, and I'm a little worried about it, but I'd love to see people tackle that costume. I'd love to tackle it myself. And you know what? I think I've got a better chance of attacking that costume.
So you've just been wanting to do an Assassin's Creed costume.
I've been wanting to do an Assassin's Creed costume for so long. And the thing is, like, chance. I have a feeling that this character is going to be slightly Native American, so it's the dark
skin. Yeah,
the fact
he's got a hatchet
win.
In one hand and
the hatchet that's got the like shaped like the assassin symbol. Oh god.
Okay,
that's
so
cool.
I'm gonna admit something right now.
Yeah.
I didn't like any of the games. I didn't like any of them. Okay. But from what I do know, don't they cut off one of their fingers to let the blade go through? Like the hidden blade?
I'm not going to lie. I do not play the games that much. Here's the thing. I don't like them as games. I don't like them as games at all.
You like them as storytelling devices.
I like them as stories. When I was living with my brother, he would play them all the time, and I would just come in every day and see like whatever cinematic he was watching at the moment and like you know pick up the story from there. And he played all the way through one and all the way through two while I was watching it. I was like, this is a good story. This is a fun story. And I like the character. I like the costume and I like the story. I don't like the game so much. The gameplay is kind of like slightly repetitive.
I got a question then. Like, have they ever thought to novelize some of these video games?
I think they do.
Yeah?
I don't know if they do it for Assassin's Creed.
Not for Assassin's Creed, but for a lot of the popular ones,
but
they
like
do.
Halo has a novelization.
That would make sense. I mean, because everyone can probably tell from my silence, I don't really play video games so very much. I will watch them sometimes, which actually makes me feel better that that's kind of how you know it, like from watching it.
Yeah.
And every time I do mention, like, oh, I should play more video games, people are like, don't, live your life. And so I'm like, oh, okay. But yeah, no, as far as novels, I mean, that's another great way to, like, because there are a lot of really cool stories.
World of Warcraft has, like...
Yeah, World of Warcraft has
they have
tons of novels.
I've read all of them, too, and they're actually really good.
Here's the thing about the novelizations on a lot of projects like that. Even looking back to something like Star Wars. Star Wars had a whole bunch of novelizations after...
Right.
Revenge of the... Or not after Revenge of the Sith.
Return
of the Jedi. And the novelizations told the stories of the original, prequels, you know, the story of Anakin and all that. So when people went into, you know, the films 1, 2, and 3, a lot of people already knew the story because it had been established already. So they're just, you know, building up what is canon. And they did it with Halo as well. Like, the story of Halo Reach had already been told.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of people, when the game came out, they were like, oh, this is not going to end well, is it? It's called Halo Reach. Because, spoiler alert, Reach
is
false.
Lost. Yes. Of course, it's not like they didn't allude to it at all in the, you know, 1, 2, or 3.
Yeah.
Every time they talked about Reach,
they were like, oh my god, the thing that happened at Reach, oh my god. Everyone at Reach is dead.
Something must have happened at Reach that was real bad. And then I got the book, and I'm like, oh, it was real bad.
And then you play the game, and it's like, what's the point of trying to beat all this? I'm just going to die.
I think I fell out of the Halo thing, like, a little bit before they announced Reach.
Oh, really?
So I was like, nope.
See, Halo for me is still, like, the best multiplayer game on Xbox Live for me. And I just, like, I can log on to that at any time and just be like, I'm going to play 16-player, you know, multiplayer map and, you know, have a good time. Because I have not yet gotten sucked into MMOs.
Don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless you want to make money.
Oh, God. Canon just announced their new camera, and this is not a cinematography podcast, so I don't want to talk about my work, but their new camera, I would have to sell everything that I own camera-wise and then double that.
It better be a Red.
Ooh.
No, it's a 5D Mark III.
Oh, my God. Oh my god, no.
If I could buy a Red. If I could buy a Red, I'd buy something else. But anyway.
Can you rent it and play with it?
I can probably rent it. It's like there's so many things that it can do just in the camera that normally you'd need, you know, so much extra stuff to be able to do. Anyway, this is not the podcast that I should be doing right now.
I'm going to
start a cinematography podcast on the side. Speaking of actually going and shooting things,
go to a gun range.
I recently worked. That's not what I meant.
I know.
I recently worked on a project done by Aaron Shonky at Bat in the Sun called Superpower Beatdown, and I just want to quickly plug that. It's kind of a Deadliest Warrior for fictional characters. It's a lot of fun. Like, basically, what nerds do all the time is sit around and speculate about what would happen if, you know, blah, blah, blah faced so-and-so, or, you know, like, you put these two devices against each other, like, you know, what would win, kind of thing. So, this show is being run by Machinima, and it's going to be all about actually doing that in a kind of Mythbusters kind of way. And the first episode, which it's at superpowerbeatdown.com, you can go and vote for who you think will win in the first episode. It's the 1966 Batmobile versus the 1989 Batmobile. And it's pretty freaking cool.
I've been hearing a lot of really good things about this for a while from the people involved, and I'm looking forward.
Yeah, that's true, because it's hosted by Marisha Ray and Damian Buehr and Andy Legal, and they all do a fantastic job debating this kind of stuff. Because the thing is, when, like, G4 or something like that will do a show like this, I always get the feeling, like, they don't know enough about the content. They're like, you know, this is Batmobile. It's black.
Right. It's got four wheels, we think.
And wings.
Yeah.
And... That's it. So, but they're, you know, like, they're both big, the two guys that are going back and forth are both big fans, and you guys should go vote for the car that you think will win, you know, in a battle, in a race, whatever you guys want to, you know, vote about, you know, you can vote on the website. Okay, sorry, Jordan's showing me a text real quick. Do you want to talk about that?
I don't know. He didn't say that it was open game,
What are you doing teasing this stuff? Bug, like, in a week, bug Jordan about this. Or you know what? Next week in the podcast, we will definitely talk about it because it'll be out by then. So we can talk about it.
But it's the same night that we record.
Now. We can record later, maybe.
We'll figure
it out.
We'll figure something out.
Apart from the stuff that we can't talk about, we got a whole lot of stuff we cannot talk about. Burning a hole.
We can talk a little. I just want to say it's sort of fun since the earlier project, one of them that we can't talk that much about, that I spoke about earlier, Joey has since gotten very deeply sucked into, which I'm glad because he's been doing an amazing job on it. Batgirl spoiled, coming soon. So now he's been a part of that, and it's been pretty exciting.
Yeah, we got a lot of content and a lot of coverage coming from that, but we don't want to spoil it for you now.
Nah. Yeah.
But
yes, very nice.
That was a little bit of a delay on that. You know, Batgirl Spoiled actually got me into a kind of mood recently. A mood that originally started last Comic-Con when I was building up my Riddler costume. And I've been building my Riddler costume for a long time because every time I finish it, I want to redo it. Mm. And it's not like I'm not happy with it, but it's just like I kind of feel like Riddler's image would change a little bit. You know,
yeah.
Like he would dress the occasion and kind of, you know, a little different each time. Just kind of like, no, I'll be wearing these gloves tonight.
And there's only so many villains that can do that. That's the thing. There's a few that it's like, this is their outfit and that's it. But a few, definitely, you know, have a wardrobe. Joker definitely has a wardrobe from swimwear to like, you know.
Yeah,
everything. All kinds of suits, all kinds of colors. Donnie really wants to do one with like the orange pants that like comes with this sort of, there's this figurine that he loves that has like Joker and orange pants and like this purple.
Oh, where he's being punched and he's in the straitjacket?
Is it like?
No, it's not the straitjacket. Is it like? He's in like teal pants in that or something.
Is it like the zoot suit look?
No, it's I think he's wearing a gas mask in it or something. But yeah, so there's all these different things you can kind of do with it. And the Riddler, I think, is definitely another one.
Oh yeah.
So yeah.
If I could find green fur for a fur-lined jacket, I would totally do it.
You can totally.
It would just be like, because that would be the kind of thing Riddler do. Be like, I'd spent $8,000 on a jacket. Why? Because I'm worth it.
You want me to get you 3 yards when I see that? Because now I'm excited.
That'd be awesome.
I'm really excited to see you.
I will do that.
All right, let it be done.
So when I was building the Riddler costume, I got into this mode of looking for pieces that could be turned into question marks. So I was looking at like, you know, like laser cut letters and things like that. And I'm like, that two, if I chopped it at a certain angle and then, you know, it's like sanded the edge down to a tip, that could be a question mark. And then I could stick that on top of a cane or something like that.
Yes.
And, you know, like you get into that mode of you're looking at stuff to try and build it up in your mind. And that's the part of cosplay that I like to do. A lot of people like to look at things and just say, oh, I can build that from scratch. I'm going to sculpt it and mold it and things like that. And to me, that just gets kind of repetitive. And, it, you know, like, A, it gets kind of repetitive. B, you need a whole lot of skill to be able to do that right.
Yeah.
And for the way I do with things, you just need a good eye. You need an imagination.
And it's fun. It's like a scavenger hunt in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it is really fun. And like, especially with this project, I've had to do a lot of that because we had to sort of pull together, you know, some of these costumes on the cheap until we have funding. And so I've had to go all these places and sort of look at what could be turned into what and what could be a cheap way to make what.
Yeah.
And as much as I enjoy that, there are a few things where I'm like, I just gotta learn how to make some shit. Like, I really wanna up some of my skills in some of that when it gets too hard to, like, you know, you've gone around to, like, you know, 12 stores that day and whatever. But that's definitely one of my methods. And one of my, because I, like, even when I was, you know, like, in high school making art pieces, that was my favorite way to just, like, piece stuff together.
Yeah, and,
like,
you just find random stuff.
Yeah,
and
that was my favorite. Like, you know, I loved, like, installation art and that kind of thing. And just, I love pulling pieces together and turning them into what you want. And
yeah.
So, I'm glad that that's a method that you also favor, because, or at least look well upon, because, It's a whole other skill in itself in a way, and it can be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Especially when you're not on a deadline, but yeah.
Yeah, like, to go along with that, I've been learning how to make lightsabers.
Ooh. I see that hanging off your belt.
Practical lightsabers. I remember you
this
were talking
just,
about
this. This is just, you know, whatever. This is my first one.
I like how we can hear the lightsaber through the podcast.
No, but you can see it. This is just like, oh, let's see. We went to Home Depot, and I totally, like, grabbed a whole bunch of stuff out of the plumbing aisle. Then my uncle's like, here, have my power drill with all this stuff, like a Dremel.
Nice.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so I basically grabbed a whole bunch of nonsense from the plumbing aisle, pipes, PVC, all kinds of nonsense. And
we've sung the praises of Home Depot in doing that before here. So, yeah, totally.
So I was like, wow, this is actually working.
So now you can build your own custom lightsabers, the handle, and you've recently been working on the visual effects to actually implement a lightsaber in a video.
Oh yeah, that's a lot easier though.
Yeah.
That just seems so backwards though. that nowadays the
practical is harder.
The actual building of
the prop, the
prop is harder than the constant stream of light laser sword.
This is the thing is with After Effects. It's a wonderful option of being able to build something and then save it as a preset.
And then just tack it on.
And then just tack it on and then just adjust the settings from then on there. So, like, once I've built it, it's just, 5 minutes of rotoscoping. I'm done.
Click.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, I mean, like, I think, honestly, After Effects is definitely a good program for video, but, even just Photoshop for photos and things like that, when people are doing cosplays and stuff like that, I think that if you can take the time to create a little bit of visual effects for your cosplay photos, it sells it so much. When you see a character that just has like a little bit of glow in their skin or something like that, fire effects or something in the background, where you take out the background and put it in the background from the game, stuff like that. I mean, like that. Those are the photos
I have
that
a
go
lot of those.
Super viral and stuff like that.
We have a lot of those on our DPW site too that people don't know are not the real backgrounds, I think. So.
Oh yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah, with a photo, it's actually pretty. Yeah, I mean you can learn it pretty quick for Photoshop, because as much as we mess around with video, you just have to mess around with one frame.
Yeah, like Photoshop, it's a lot easier to pick up and it's less. Aggravating when you mess something up and you don't realize where exactly you messed it up, so then you have to just go backwards until you find out.
It's like I pressed the button and something went crazy. I don't know. That's After Effects in a nutshell, and motion too.
You saw what the shit after VFX artists save video.
Oh yeah,
that's my life.
So real quick, going back to the searching for pieces thing. Do you ever get that feeling like after you finally found the piece that you're looking for and you're totally happy with it, you've built the stuff, me with my Riddler cane, when I put the question mark on there, for like a week and a half later, I was still like looking everywhere for question marks going, I've already built it.
Just a week and a half? Oh God. Yeah, that gets so implanted in my brain that like once I'm looking for it for more than a week or two, my brain thinks I'm always looking for it, even if I found something close to it. So I'm still looking, and something could still be better and still be cheaper.
I've got to tell you, we're still looking for Becky's jacket for Lilith from Borderlands. We found it like twice. I think we bought it twice, but we found it like 19 times. Like I just in stores, because after we bought it, like this is what always happens. You're looking for something, it's super hard to find. You rarely ever see it right.
Yeah.
And then after you find one and you're like, oh, this is perfect, and you buy it. You find like 20 more after that that are just as good. Maybe not like as good, but if you had seen them, you would have bought them, kind of thing. And like that's the stresses with, not custom building everything, is because right after you're done, all of a sudden that style comes into fashion purple gloves everywhere. It's like, I could have used those
I could have used them. Japan. Oh
that
my
completely
God.
Reminds me, two different stories. One, the simpler one, which is the sad one, which is the bracelets I used for Dawson were dog toys, okay?
Oh yeah, they're chew toys brain itself.
When I bought them, I thought they were perfect. They fit on my arm, they fit on my wrists easily, and they weren't heavy. But they were really cheap, and I always wondered why. Because they were on clearance. Because they don't sell them anymore.
Anywhere. Oh, so now trying to remake them?
So I have to basically sand off the paint if it starts chipping, and then just reapply it.
Repaint.
But I have to be careful because they can break at this point, because they've soaked in all this paint, so they've become
rubber,
brittle.
It's rubber essentially going really brittle.
So that's now I have to take care of those especially carefully. But on another note, with Jessica, she did a costume which she was essentially cosplaying a police officer from Japan.
Yeah.
But she had to find a female police officer outfit that matched the exact style of a Japanese police officer. A female outfit.
Yes, that's that'd be tricky. I mean, honestly, that's not exactly something you can type into Google.
No, especially since it's illegal to impersonate the law. But we found it.
Wow.
And then never found it again.
Exactly. It took us 11 months.
Oh, oh my God. Yeah, that is bad. I mean, I searched for the longest time when I did when I first did my Joker tailcoat. Mm-hmm. I searched for the longest time to try and find a Joker tailcoat. Because here's the thing about like the suit characters, where you know Joker and Riddler are the two ones that I've done mostly that wear suits. As much as you can kind of, you know, commission a suit, or if you have the skill, you can make one, you're never going to match the quality of, you know, a suit. Like, it's a very intricate piece, but at the same time, in its intricacy, it's actually very easily mass-produced.
Right.
In a bunch of different sizes and things like that. And it's like, you know, I like that. The suit, I've always found, like, you know, I don't trust anyone to be able to build it because I think I can go just find it for the price it would take to commission one.
You know what I found, and this is bizarre in LA, but tailcoats are really hard to find off the rack now.
Tailcoats are so hard to find,
and you would not think that. And like, we have amazing resources in LA where you can go places with like just miles of suits, every color, every cut, every whatever. And we had to go through like about five different huge stores full of suits for a tailcoat, because we wanted like a different one for like a black style. Like, we wanted to do the kind of Alex Ross one.
Yes.
And his other one has been falling apart, and it wasn't even split, so we had to have it split up the middle because that was in a style that was too old fashioned or something like that. So we had to have it.
Is it like a cutaway coat?
Yeah. Well, it was like it had a tail like this, you know, but this was just one big scoop, just one. Yeah, you know, so like, and it was
like
really
like a ducktail kind of
exactly. It was like a platypus suit, and so we had to have it cut up the middle and like redone so it was actually tails. And since it was so weirdly rounded and like Joker's a little bit more, you know, angled, we had to have him cut that in. So when we finally found one, oh my god! And actually, we found one. We got, you know, one of the sales guys, and we're like, okay, here's a size. Here's what we want. He went for 40 minutes looking for like he's like, I have one. I have, yes, somewhere. And so we were seriously waiting for about 40 minutes so he could dig out from like some hidden, tucked away corner of this huge shop.
But he knew we had one.
That we had to have completely re-
His storage unit from the 1960s just.
Moths like floating around it and stuff. But yeah, that was really bizarre. And so all his other stuff, like I found this one place in Nepal actually that makes amazing custom suits, and that's like it otherwise. Because we'd be screwed now. Cause,
yeah, you've been telling me about that for a while. Can you send me a link to that and I can put it up in the Enhanced Podcast for anyone who wants a custom suit?
Yeah.
I'll get it from you. But see, my Joker tailcoat, I went through the same kind of process, and eventually, you know, after a full-on year, and I think I bought two testers to try and like get a color that was close and maybe dye it or something like that, or you know, none of that worked. I found a guy on eBay who's called the Tux Man. That's his handle there.
I think we got a vest from him.
He apparently used to just rent out tuxedos and stuff for weddings and things like that, and for proms and stuff, and just sells them now. So he did, after The Dark Knight came out, and everyone was making the Dark Knight Joker jackets, he did a run of tailcoats that were comic book style tailcoats.
Oh.
They were going for about $100, and they were just...
Wow.
Just the tailcoat, no pants to match or anything, but the tailcoat, you know, had a nice cutaway. And he was doing it in all kinds of sizes. And by the time I had the money to get it, I was like, you know, I saw it on Thursday. Paycheck comes in Friday. I was like,
aww.
I'm just going to wait. I'm going to wait 24 hours. It'll be back. And I went on after I had put money in my bank account and everything, and they were gone. All of them were gone. And I emailed the guy. I was like, hey, I noticed that you don't have any more of these up. Are you going to list more, or, you know, did you sell out? And he was like, well, yeah, all the ones that I had put up were, you know, all of the ones in that style have sold out.
Poor Joey.
I do have one more that was a slightly different style of tailcoat that, you know, I also got dyed purple because he just took a shit ton of white tailcoats and had them professionally dyed.
Wow.
Like all in one go, and then just had them
smart
back.
Guy.
And then, because these are like damaged tailcoats that, you know, were rentals that he could only sell for like $20 or something like that.
Yeah, for the turkey, kind of a little cool to have some battle damage. Not that he, you know,
yeah, it's, I mean, it's not too much, but it's,
yeah,
like, just, it's like a hole in the pocket.
They've
or
been
something
worn.
Like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Nice. And stuff like that. But so mine has this weird, like, texturing to it, which honestly I like more. And it's, you know, sometimes it helps to just email the people.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of thing. Like, you know, people out on the internet, like, the world of the internet gets this bad rap of everyone being assholes and just, you know, shooting down shit and, you know, being complete trolls. But a lot of people who run stores on the internet will be really nice and help you out if you're looking for a cosplay or something like that. So
yeah,
if you're looking for a piece of something where you're, you know, looking at, you know, obviously not big stores. You can't go to Target and say, hey, I just want that piece of your Imaginext Batman playset. You know, like Etsy and eBay and things like that, you can almost always email the guys and be like, hey, I don't have all the money for, you know, what you're selling, but I do just want that one piece. Do you think you could, you know, make another one like that or something, or, you know, help me out in some way, or I need this adjusted, you know, a little bit. Almost always people are, you know, totally willing to help out with stuff like that.
Yeah, I've come across that too, I think, and that's a nice tip to just, you know, just ask. Yeah. On that tip too, can I just say,
yeah,
I've been really embarrassed by the fact that, like, you know, ever since, like, The Dark Knight came out and you've got all those, like, you know, lead jokers with, like, these perfect purple leather gloves.
Lead jokers.
I've been wanting to get... You haven't heard that before?
I've never heard them called that.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's awesome.
but, like, for a long time, I wanted to get Donnie, like, purple leather gloves. And I, after a ton of hunting, I finally found some, like, this, like, Italian. I had to, like, order it again from, like, somewhere across the pond or whatever.
Yeah.
And they weren't quite perfect. They're pretty good. They're sort of made for winter gloves, so they kind of, the cuff sort of hit his sleeve and whatever, but they're pretty cool. But these ones that all these guys are wearing, these perfect, like, fitted, tight, sexy purple leather gloves, I have no idea where they're getting
them. You mean
them
the
from.
Ones that end at the wrist?
Yeah, like, are they women's gloves? Because that was another
thought,
because women's gloves...
Here's the one.
Yeah.
You remember, you saw mine at Comic-Con, and, you know, we showed those to Donnie.
Okay.
Those, go to Target in November.
Oh, right.
Go to Target in November in the women's section, and I just got them oversized. So that they would fit me.
Okay. See, I wondered because, like, because women's gloves, for one, come in, like, a million colors, and, like, men's is really hard to
find. Yeah, it was just plum
else.
Was in that season,
yeah.
I guess.
And I need that stitching on the top. I need that, you know.
Yeah.
Alternatively, you could also find a lighter pair, a very light pair, and then I know a guy who does leather working.
Okay.
And he could dye them.
Okay.
Because he's got all kinds of dye.
Nice. All right.
You know, then if that's the case, then look at steampunk stores. I bet you could find some white leather driving gloves.
That would be beautiful.
Because then you could get a crisp purple. Like, unless you want, like,
that.
That
actually be cool, like the fingerless driving gloves that have, like, the knuckles showing and things like
that'd
that.
That'd be funny because we could, like, do it, because we have to do it.
Or, no, sorry,
anyway,
not the fingerless, but the ones that have the hole, like, right there on the top of the hand.
That'd be kind of pretty.
Oh, that would be really
You know what?
Cool.
He needs a Joker driving outfit anyway. For his car.
A scarf.
Oh, my God. It's like the goggles.
That's right.
And
he's got a Jokered out car.
Yeah.
He's a bright orange Dodge Challenger.
Oh, my God. I know what I'm doing for his 41st birthday.
I wanted so bad to buy a green car when I was shopping for a new
car.
But I just bought a new car. And I love it, but it's not a car that would look good in a green, I think. So
I don't know if you were here, Jordan. We ended up talking about that sort of, like, next level of cosplay where you actually get your car
to,
like,
match
to your character. Yeah.
There's some people actually do this.
Yeah.
I know a few.
Right.
Somebody somebody I know tricked out their motorcycle a while back to look like Cloud's motorcycle from Avengers Children.
God.
And it still functioned.
That's ridiculous.
He brought it to AX.
That's so awesome. Nice. I'll put a picture of that up in the Enhanced podcast.
If I can find
it.
Yes. That was years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
it was like 06.
I will try and put up a picture. Boop. That's where the picture goes. Oh, Matt's not here to make the whip sound.
Oh.
Yeah, Matt's not here, and all of a sudden we're talking about Batman like crazy.
Oh, that happens. That happens even when he is here.
Yeah. So, real quickly, while we have Jordan here, I have been avoiding talking about this ever since the Coscast started, but I feel like I need to now. I want to talk about Vulpin stuff. I want to talk about the stuff
that... Why? Why do you do this to me, Joey? Why?
Okay, well, it's partially because the way he builds props is a combination of the two styles that I was just talking about, the building it from scratch and the finding pieces.
Yeah.
And it's that marriage of the two that makes everything he does so accurate. Like, for instance, the Big Daddy helmet. If you guys have not seen anything built by Vulpin, you have been living under a rock. But we will put up a link to his website anyway. You guys can look at the amazing stuff that he builds. He's famous for the world's most accurate Big Daddy costume, the portal gun that's been used by, you know, Valve and PlayStation to promote Portal. And it's been given away at charity auctions and things like that. He's right now building, a whole bunch of Daft Punk helmets and N7 rifles.
Oh, he's been building Daft Punk helmets, but the N7 rifles are quite beautiful.
Yeah, those are the things that are getting cranked out at the moment.
Yes.
These things are probably... There are no prices on the website. I just know that I would never be able to afford any of his stuff ever.
Oh, no. As far as I know, Harrison... The way he does things is, I don't think he's one to list a price so much as...
Suggest a donation.
No. He'll give you a quote.
Ah. Yeah, okay.
That's especially because he'll work with a person, as far as I can tell, at what they want. But at the same time, if you're coming to him and you have an outlandish request...
Yeah.
He'll act like nothing's wrong, but then it's...
Yeah. From all accounts, he's a very nice guy, and you know, everything he builds.
If I was in his position, I wouldn't be able to deal with it. Like, I would have just given up. That man is a legend.
So the other reason I bring him up is because NECA has started building a portal gun, replica portal gun. Like they built the chainsaw machine gun from Gears of War 3. That is a really good replica to be using for cosplay and things like that. But NECA started building a portal gun that they're selling for $120, something like that.
Yeah.
For how accurate it looks like it's going to be, that is incredibly cheap. I mean, it's the mass-produced version, so I don't think it's going to stand up to something like, you know, Vulpin's work or anything like that, because everything he does is custom.
Do you know if it's going to have LED?
I believe it does. I don't know how powerful they are, though. I mean, that's the thing. The second you're doing custom work, you're putting in, you know...
Ultra powerful.
You know, a battery pack that you don't have to worry about.
And you also build it in a way that you can interchange out batteries if necessary.
Yeah. I mean, at that level, yeah. Honestly, when I build stuff, I kind of like, the battery's stuck in there. I'd have to take the whole fucking thing apart to... change the battery. I'm just not going to use it often enough to ever drain the battery.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I end up building stuff.
This portal gun is like, they just announced it, so we don't really know much about it.
Yeah, I do not know much. But it looks gorgeous, and especially because Chell is not a terribly difficult costume. Especially since the, for Portal 2, they make the tank top. And then it's just an orange jumpsuit, you know, tied around at the waist, and the boots would be the hard thing.
You mean the costume, the high jump, whatever the heck.
The high jump boots, because in the first one there's springs on the back of her leg, like bows, and then the second one they're full on boots. So, it's either one though is still like that's the next thing that you've got to build. And then the portal gun was always the hardest thing about that costume. Like the actual costume, super easy. But Chell is not Chell without that portal gun.
Do you think with this there's going to be an explosion of Chell cosplay?
I think there is. I really do. We can expect to see those, after that comes out. Real quick, one more thing I do want to talk about, because talking about NECA actually reminded me of it. I just want to say quick congratulations to Jessica Negri, who's a good friend of ours here at the Coscast, who just won the contest with Lollipop Chainsaw. The company was who created the video game was searching for someone to portray the lead character, and lead character Juliet, and Jessica does great Juliet cosplay that came out this year, and she ended up winning the contest and is now the official face of the game Lollipop Chainsaw, nice. And is the official Juliet. So you'll see her, if you don't already see her at conventions all the time, you will begin to see her officially affiliated with that game. So
nice. I wonder if they'll start doing that more.
They have been. I mean, you know, Crystal with, why can't I think of the name?
With a Blizzard, BioWare,
no,
Valve, 2K.
It's for a game. Come back to me, I'll remember.
Gearbox, keep on going. So, you know, like, awesome. I mean, how many people do we run into and know that, like, have done the costumes or done a character in, like, an official capacity on top of cosplaying? We do tend to, like, there are a lot of people who just, like, yeah, this is my job, but I also like to do it for fun as well.
There's a few. DC, I guess, not as many because DC and Warner Brothers are so weird about that, but...
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah, the video game video game companies have always been kind of cooler about
that. Yeah, totally.
On another note, about video game companies and how they are with their fan bases.
Yeah.
Do you remember the name of the company that made Psychonauts?
Is it Naughty Dog?
All I know is this company, they didn't want to go through the, you know, the middleman of finding funding. You know that process that companies have to go through is they gotta pitch their game or whatever. So this company was like, okay, we have a huge fan base and we want to make something. So what we're going to do is we're going to start a fundraiser.
Oh, wow. Like a Kickstarter campaign?
That's exactly what they
did. Oh, God, that's awesome.
Within the first 24 hours, I think they got like $1 million.
I mean,
oh,
I think that's like...
Really?
Exactly. That's
taking... For a point-and-click adventure.
But here's the beauty of that is that when you do that, like, honestly, I'm going to buy the next Borderlands. I'm going to buy Borderlands 2. That's an inevitability. So... if they're going to run a Kickstarter campaign to, you know, fund building that, I would pay the money now so I get it free later. And it's the same, like, I'm still spending the same amount of money, but I'm helping them make it. And it's just cutting out the middleman. And, like, I think this is a genius way to, you know, start, you know, I'm sure anyone who works in marketing will be super pissed off at me for saying this because we're cutting out their job. But, you know...
And it's funny because, well, you don't always know when that's going to happen. Like, they just, you know, like, that's kind of the perfect storm sometimes. Like, sometimes you can go for that and it's like, okay, this is going to completely work out. And then just people are like, oh, okay, well, $30, whatever. And it's like, you just never know when it's going to be that successful. And that's really cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I know a lot of people are pissed about those websites, Kickstarter and Indiegogo, because they originally started for, you know, like, you know, this church choir needs, you know, new microphones. Please donate. We need a grand total of $250. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. You know, like little things like that. That's what it was supposed to be for.
Oh, and people are upset that it's become this huge.
Yeah, thing. And now people are, like, funding their feature films and stuff like that, and, you know. But at the same time, like, someone was talking about this earlier. There was a spinoff from Community.
Being created. This is such a cool idea.
Tell me about this, because I don't watch Community. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh my God, they did this amazing parody of Doctor Who, that like one of the characters. Oh God, of course I'm gonna forget his name when I'm doing this. But Danny Pudi plays him. I remember his name, but not. Anyway, like he is completely obsessed with, like, you know, all things like pop culture and like films and TV, and he had. I think there was, well, I guess I don't have to go into the whole backstory. Sorry, I really like Community. Anyway, they created the series like to show him that was basically a Doctor Who thing called Inspector Space Time.
Oh, God.
And it's just this amazing little Doctor Who parody. And they gave it to him because there's like, you know, just like Doctor Who, there's like so many episodes over like so, you know. Over so much time, and so he could just be absorbed in this thing and know that it's not going to end for a very long time. But yeah, apparently, I guess the was it the actors who played
it was the actors who started a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, I guess they're going to try to make this series.
They're going
to.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
And the best part is it's not affiliated with Community at all. It's not affiliated with the network or the show itself. So they're essentially making a fan film of themselves.
Yeah. I think it's beautiful. That's brilliant.
And Kickstarter makes it, because obviously they, you know, I'm pretty sure they went to the studio first and said, hey, what if we did a spin-off of this? And the studio said, no, that's a dumb idea. So, you know, going to the fans and getting the money through that, like that, that's proving that there is the demand for this.
That means, yeah, and that reminds me, I need to go on and like fund that, baby.
Yeah, seriously.
That's cool.
Guys. with the money that you guys aren't spending on Fabric and Bondo and, you know, Wonderflex and things like that, just find a couple projects on Kickstarter. Go ahead and donate like, you know, $5, $10 to each one. It's really rewarding to kind of be in on the ground level of projects like that. I know there are a bunch of films that I've donated to or projects that I've, you know, because I've donated, I've met the people who worked on it and, you know, became friends with and started to work with them on other stuff. I mean, that's kind of how I ended up meeting, you know, Aaron and Damien and Freddie Wong and things like
that.
Right? And, you know, just from donating to their projects and saying like, hey, I really love what you guys do, blah, 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 blah. You know, and then later we'd end up on a set together and it was like, hey, I know you, you were, you know, you donated to my project and now, you know, let me return the favor. Let me help you on this project. And it's like, well, yeah, sure.
That's
fantastic.
Cool.
This is not a film podcast. I need to stop.
I know, right?
Like, we've been doing too much fan film stuff. I'm like, this cross is over, right? This is cosplay.
Our brains are
still
all in that. Yeah.
Kind of. but yeah, like the, I mean, I, as much as I love cosplay and as much as I, you know, always want to do a fan film, I always end up behind the camera on it. So that's the part I end up talking about.
Yeah.
What do you think? Not necessarily specific to Batgirl Spoiled, because we're going to talk about Batgirl Spoiled a whole bunch, you know, later on when we can, when we really can get into the nitty gritty of it. But what do you think in general for fan films and things like that, and for even for like booth babes at conventions and stuff, for people who are hired to portray a character and maybe given like a fantastic costume and stuff like that, versus the person who is a fan and, you know, maybe doesn't have the budget to put together a great costume, but, you know, is just truly actually likes the content. Like, what are your thoughts on the comparison there?
I think I get what you're asking. You know, the funniest thing is that the first thing that came to mind when you mentioned that was my total disappointment once when we were at Comic-Con and I saw this amazing She-Ra, this like booth babe, and I like kind of freaked out on her because that was just one of my first like big, you know, things I was into as a kid with She-Ra. She knew nothing. She was like, hi. And like, once they don't have that spirit, like she looked fantastic, but once she didn't have that spirit, I was like, oh, okay, well, it's been nice meeting you. Have fun. It's funny because like for the series, which I'll try to not talk too deeply about it, but you know, some of the people who are the characters we've chosen know a lot about the characters and really love them, and some of them are new to it. But what's been funny for me is that so many of them, once we like get them dressed, I get that same little thrill that I get when I see somebody in the convention floor who looks amazingly like this character. I'm like, oh, it's Batwoman! Oh my god, hi! You look great! And like, I've been so surprised at how when I see them, you just get this special little like flutter, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess it's knowing that how deeply they're going to be portraying them. Because I guess with like a booth babe, there's not much they're going to do. Like, that's the thing. If that She-Ra girl was like, okay, I don't know anything about She-Ra, but let me give it all I got. Let me learn about her and let me go for it. Then that would have made a huge difference.
Instead of playing it off like they have no idea.
Yeah. You know, so I think anybody who, at least if they are going to give it a shot, and they didn't know anything about it, but they're like, all right, well, let me go ahead and try to, like, do this person justice, do this character justice. That means a lot, you know? Yeah. So even if they hadn't, like, you know, read all the comics about them or, you know, been completely invested in them, like, it's just trying to, like, bring that spirit out in the way that you know means a ton. And I think that would help a lot with Booth Babes, you know, for...
Yeah, yeah, just doing that little bit of research. Because honestly, yeah, like, going
just
back to that...
That little bit of enthusiasm makes all the difference.
Well, going back to that, the contest for Lollipop Chainsaw, I wonder if that's why Jessica won, because she... she looks a whole lot like the character, but she's also a big fan of the game. You know, like, hasn't even come out yet. She knows a whole lot about it, and she's ready to, you know, like, portray it even before the contest was announced.
Right. So. Oh, that's the other thing, too. Like, somebody who really, really knows a character like that, but doesn't have the greatest costume, sometimes you're still so drawn to them because they've got that spirit so well. So it's not all one or the other, you know?
Yeah, there's a middle ground, I think, that you have to find. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I mean, Becky and I were talking about the girl that was hired by Gearbox to play Lilith for the new Borderlands game. They recently, and by they, I don't mean Gearbox, I mean someone who's a photographer, who's a cosplay photographer, recently did a photo shoot with her. She's Australian national, so I guess when she was back in town in Australia, someone put together the costume real quick, said, hey, you do the face for this character in the game. You want to put on this costume and do a photo shoot as this character? And it's a photographer that we've seen a little bit of. Same photographer that did Elise's photos as Harley. That's the spider Harley shot.
The only Australian photographer I know goes by Beethy.
Beethy, that's
I knew it! I knew it!
Look at you. Nice.
See, the cosplay community is so small even when we're talking about... literally the other side of the planet.
Wow, yeah.
That, I mean, so I love that. She, I know
he.
Beethy by a name. Beethy, he.
It sounds like something he would do. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I mean, the photos look great. And, you know, it's
yeah, he does great
the
work.
Official Lilith from the game. And, I mean, the first interview I heard with her, she didn't seem like she... knew much about the character or anything like that, but I'm assuming that she's going to start learning it more and more and might become like the booth babe for, and which is not the term I want to use anymore.
I know, it's going to be a better one.
But like, I didn't want to use cosplay as a term because I, you know,
like I said before, you guys have warmed me up to it a lot because I was like, oh god, that word.
It seemed like booth babes are really only around like E3. And sometimes Comic-Con, but now they're showing up everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that. They used to be... Because when Comic-Con was a comic book convention, there weren't really any booth babes. I mean, that kind of wasn't as much of a thing.
Yeah.
Like, you were there to pick up, you know, 5-cent comics or something like that. You know, just go through bins and try and figure out what, you know... Like, and even cosplay wasn't as big of a thing, you know, back in the first, you know... back in the first years of Comic-Con, I can't speak back that far, but back, you know, when I first started going, it wasn't as big of a thing.
Yeah.
Where you'd see maybe out of 100 people, you'd see maybe like 10 costumes, something like that.
If that, I'd guess, yeah.
And now it's like one costume for every other person.
Yeah, really?
And everyone's, you know, in huge costumes, so they're now like 3 people wide. So, you know, trying to cram it in that convention hall. Honestly, like that's one of the things that I think is the hardest thing about making a costume is that you make it so you can wear it and you can stand and look good in photos. And then you've got to make it so it's con ready. So you can walk around in it for, you know, any number of hours and, you know, it's not going to fall apart.
Yeah.
And it's not going to, you know, like, get knocked in a crowd and all of a sudden the piece falls off. Last year at Comic-Con when we did the Borderlands costumes, immediately after leaving the hotel, I lost, like, a side panel holster that was mounted on the side of my leg and it, you know, had like the LEDs and stuff inside it, and like I took some work putting this thing together because it, you know, it lit up, and you know, like it looked really nice. It's battle damaged, and it was like it just wasn't strapped on well, and you know, I'm in a like a sensory deprivation mask because my ears are blocked off, and I'm looking through these goggles, looking around, and then I look like down, and I realize that it's gone off my leg.
No.
And I look back, and it's nowhere to be seen. And I'm like, shit! There
you know
goes
what?
Like
everyone. Finish your
50
costume
bucks
and,
of work.
And take a jog. Go for a little jog.
See
and
if anything
if
comes
gonna,
up.
Exactly. Yeah, you want to do it around your neighborhood rather than the convention floor.
I was going to say, yeah, everyone in your neighborhood already knows you're weird anyway. So,
right.
Yeah, just go for it.
What better to, yeah, that's actually, oh my God, that would be a blast. Get some friends, like have them all test it out together. Have a little marathon. I don't know. Sorry.
That would be awesome. Just go outside and start washing your car in costume.
Go for it, yeah.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing? Yeah, no, just chilling.
Right.
Just getting in all the Batman stuff we can while Matt's gone, because I'm just like, Matt's not here to complain
actually,
about it. Cram it all in.
On that note, too, and again, touching on things that we may not get, details we might not get into when we can talk about the project, that's the other fun thing about putting together the costumes for the series, is like, not only do they need to look good, but you need to be able to fight in them. Like,
oh, yeah, all the fight
choreography. Take after take and stuff, yeah. And
that was one of the main problems we had with Death Wish, because they were the latex suits.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, here's the extent of my arm movements from here to here.
That's about
my
6 inches.
My shoulder can't move. Nope. You want me to bend down and pick something up? No.
That?
No, that's not happening. You want me to,
I don't think so.
I'm going to pick up evidence off the floor? Fuck that.
Really, just really tight shots of fights where your arm just goes 6 inches really fast, and it looks really dynamic close up.
Well,
you have to do a lot of tricky stuff.
I mean, that's
like that.
That's the beauty of, just a quick shout out to Will Magno, who did the fight choreography for that. He also did fight choreography for the stuff in Street Fighter High.
Yep.
I knew we couldn't not mention it. Yay!
He is,
yes.
But there's no one's going to hit me for it.
Both of you kick him.
I'm too tired.
He is a fantastic fight choreographer and was able to work with the constraints of those suits. So, kudos to him. We've also got a fantastic fight choreographer involved in Spoiled as well. But don't want to talk about it too much!
Okay, no, he's the reason I could barely walk up your stairs today. Yeah.
While we're on the topic of Batman, Jordan, do you quickly want to talk about the costume that you're working on?
Yeah, tell us about it.
It's only a fourth way done, but I was given great information, a great lead by the wonderful Matt Hiscox, and
who has a costuming company now. If you guys want to get commissions,
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Cape and Cowl, Cape and Cowl Creations. Find them on Facebook.
Okay.
We'll put a link up here. But anyway.
But I have started my Mr. Freeze, so now I can shave my head for completely different reasons. But it's only the first fourth of the costume from the top of my head down. So it's only the dome and then,
don't keep it the only.
The dome and the
start.
Shoulders. I mean, we could take a headshot for you.
No. Because I have hair right now. It won't look right if I put it on. I'll just look like I'm a Martian.
Well, yeah, I think...
That's actually true because I laughed, so I think...
And technically, it's not even truly the top half because I don't have my goggles yet.
Have a place to recommend for you then.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And
the red tint? Because I want the red.
Possibly. I will talk to you about that after the podcast.
Okay.
I think that's a good place to wrap it up this week. Be sure to check out nerdreactor.com for updates on the Coscast, as well as you can email us at coscast@nerdreactor.com. You can also find us on iTunes now and just subscribe to the podcast and have it downloaded to your computer every week, assuming we put out weekly podcasts. We try to.
You put out weekly.
Yeah. Oh man,
sometimes
I didn't realize.
Good though, right? Yeah.
I didn't realize we moved to iTunes already.
Yes. Lots
been
happened
in my
since
cave.
It's a brave new world. Once again, I'm Joey Rasool.
Tara Strand.
Jordan Brown.
And we are done. Peace.